From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning. Hope that you are doing very, very well out there. It is once again cloudy. It's been like 2 weeks now of cloud, and I see from my weather app that maybe it might even be three. But we can't complain too much about it because we do need the rain. So hopefully all the rain that is required gets into the dams that are required, and that you enjoy it in the meantime. And certainly it's not going to be hot, dry or a bit soggy in the studio today, because we have a fantastic show lined up for you, as we always do. And what is that exactly? Well, a few different things. We are going to be paying tribute, as I'm sure you've heard on a number of the stations, or shows rather, on the station in the last while, to Olga Meshu, talking about her contribution to World Jewry, to South Africa, to Africa-Israel relations, and just talking about her, her tragic death last week, affecting Jews all around the world, in fact. So we just take a moment to talk about that. We are going to be looking at the change in soft power in the Israeli ecosystem and the world Jewish ecosystem, and how that is likely to affect things like PR and engagement with Jewish communities around the world. We're going to be looking at wildlife corridors in Israel and how one group is trying to stop the deaths of wild animals in road deaths. And then we are also going to be talking about award season, something on the lighter side. Award season is coming up in Hollywood. They obviously, in Hollywood, I think suddenly the big issue at the moment obviously is the fires in LA. A lot of high profile people being affected by that. But in general, you were hitting all of the big movie seasons. And so we're going to be talking to our cultural correspondent, Alistair Anderson, to find out from him what are the big movies and the ones with Jewish content and Israeli themes that you should be looking out for. So that is all to come on 101.9 Chai FM. Do stay tuned. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. And a reminder that you can always comment on what is going on in the show. 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. And that is the WhatsApp line that will assist you to be able to talk to us and give us your perspectives. So we always look forward to having those perspectives on the show, and of any of the questions that we will be discussing. Let's start off then with a tribute to a friend of mine, to a friend of the communities, and really to a friend of Israel and global Jewry, who passed away suddenly last week. Much to the shock of everyone. Her name was Olga Meshu, and I think if you are someone who's at all followed a sort of local debates in South Africa around Israel, and specifically in the last 10 to 15 years, the growth of new supporters of our community from the broader and wider community, then you would definitely know of Olga and the work that she has done. She was the CEO of DAISY, which is the organization which was created by her father, MP Kenneth Meshu, who's the OG of Christian Zionists in the country. He's the president of the African Christian Democratic Party, and he was traveling in the States or in Canada about 12 years ago, and he realized that on the campuses and where he was talking, he was running up against this issue of the apartheid analogy, which was getting into the campuses. And he decided that he needed to create an organization to sort of fight this analogy, because the way he understood it, as someone who was affected by apartheid, and as one of the basically longest running MPs in the country, that something had to be done to push back on that. So he created an organization called DAISY, Defend, Embrace, Invest in and Support Israel. That was the name of the organization. And he put it onto the board, his daughter, Olga Mesher. And Olga was, at that time, let's say spiritually connected to Israel, but not connected from a political or any other kind of way, really. She was brought up in the Meshu household, very much in the church, the Hope and Glory Tabernacle in Katlehong, and she is an enormously impressive figure. Went to a University of Pretoria, got a degree in law, went to work for Weber Wenzel, one of the largest law firms, most prominent law firms in the country, on the continent, and eventually made partner, where she did a lot of financial related stuff, securitization, and then went off and started working in the development space, working in enterprise development. She had a very particular fondness for helping youth, and really wanted to sort of fix the issues of that apartheid had inflicted on the country. And so she worked on development projects and financing of development projects in the early years of sort of BEE related things, and was doing that sort of work when she was put on the board of DAISY. Now, at that time, the Jewish community had started creating a platform to start reaching out to the wider pro-Israel community, that was the South African Friends of Israel, and had started running conferences and workshops, sometimes protests where it was required, to engage these sorts of people that the community knew were out there but weren't sort of organized and being worked with properly. And so if you go onto the South African Friends of Israel YouTube, you will see that Olga was one of the first people who really sort of connected with SAFI and started attending the conferences. By the second one that was being hosted, she was speaking already. You can actually see her speaking at a SAFI conference and giving her perspective. And by 2014, I think people really started to notice her, because there was, of course, a war during that time. I think it was Protective Edge. And Olga spoke at a rally at Huddle Park. It was one of the biggest rallies in the world. It was 12,000 people in support of Israel. And I think that's when she really started to come to the attention of the community. And through this process of engaging the community, meeting members of the community, learning about this topic, she became more and more convinced that she had a role to play in helping to, first of all, dispel the apartheid analogy, and second of all, to build ties not just between South Africa and Israel, or even between Africa and Israel, which she also tried to do, but actually between the whole of the African continent and world Jewry. And she would go on to get married. She got married to Joshua Washington, who is part of a family that's similar to the Mesher family in America. They run something called IBC, called the Institute for Black Solidarity with Israel, IBC, excuse me. And he is a musician. And when she got married, he is an American, and so she moved there. And from there began working with a number of American Jewish organizations, the most famous perhaps being Club Z, which is a training and educational organization which helps young people understand about Israel. She worked with IBC on their projects and processes, and she came to the attention of many in Israel, including groups like Stand With Us, who knew her particularly well, etc. And so she built this network and spoke at all sorts of Jewish organizations, Maccabi Task Force, World Jewish Congress. Famously, she also appeared at the United Nations, at the Human Rights Council, to talk about the issue of Israel there, and became a really a cogent voice as in the world, and really one completely uniquely poised to really give over this particular story. She was incredibly smart, highly articulate, very, very confident, completely fearless, and very kind of strategic in the way that she would engage things, and was, you know, it was just an incredible amount of thought and effort and energy. But she didn't just stop there with the Jewish community, who were very, of course, happy to have her, but also she spent a lot of time working in the African American community now that she was based in the States, talking to pastors, talking to groups. She would travel to the African continent. She spoke in West Africa, Nigeria, and Ghana on these topics, and in fact even started producing kind of trifecta things where she would take groups of African Americans to South Africa to learn about the history here, and then to Israel to learn about the history there, and really understood that nexus probably better than anyone really actively involved with this kind of work. And she was a real inspiration, not just to members of the Jewish community, but also I think to many in the Christian community and in the African American Christian community in particular. She has two boys, Judah and Ezra, who are fairly young, and of course her husband and her in-laws, and besides her work ethic, which was incredible, Olga always came across as being very kind. She always, despite everything that she was doing, was making time for other people. She would check in to see that people were all right and that they were okay with different things, despite the fact that she was living by this time many, many thousands of kilometers away. And she was always ready to debate people and engage them and find out what their views were, even when those views were controversial. And she wasn't afraid to hold difficult views and talk to people about difficult views as well. So she, you know, she was in that way very, very open and engaging, and could give you quite a difficult time if she thought that you were doing something wrong. So you know, she was not afraid to pull her punches. She really died suddenly a week or so ago. She had been in hospital with something, but she was coming out, she was supposed to be going into a sort of recovery mode, and then died suddenly on her way back from South Africa to America, in the hospital. So our condolences go out to the Meshia family and the Washington family, and also to particularly her husband Joshua and her kids, we can only just wish them whatever comfort we can at this time. Her funeral, interestingly, is going to be in Haifa in Israel on Wednesday, the 22nd of January. She family decided to bury her there. There's also going to be a memorial in Phosphorus on the 26th of January, and in South Carolina as well. So Those are just some of the memorials that are going to be taking place. And just remembering a really unique person in the Jewish world, in the wider, broader community, and someone who just had so much time and effort and kindness for all of us. So, yeah, that is Olga Meshu. There is just, by the way, a fund that's been set up by Stand With Us for people who want to contribute to the funeral costs, of which there, of course, are many, and you can go and look on Michael Dixon's Facebook page and Stand With Us page, and they have there if you'd like to contribute. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
And I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show once again on this Monday morning. Now, two articles showed up for me in the last sort of a while, which I think point to a new phase in the way that Israel is going to be approaching their soft power and diplomacy, which I think is fascinating, interesting, and something which affects us as diaspora communities. So I thought we must definitely discuss it and put it on the agenda. So what is this exactly? Well, basically, if you look at if you look at Israel in the last year, a lot of focus and work have gone on the issues of hard power deterrence, of dealing with the social emergencies that have come out of October the 7th, the people that have been displaced, and the military issues that are being focused on. And this obviously has come at the expense of a lot of other issues in the government. And of course, we see that in the debates around the Haredim who wish to stay in Yeshiva and get government subsidies versus inside the coalition calls for more money to be given to reservists, for example, etc. So that's where that debate is playing out. But another place where it has been affected has been on Israel's image abroad. There has not been a lot of work that has been done really to give out information about what's going on in the war. Really, the only organization that has been sort of on the front line is the IDF spokesperson's unit. But inside Israel, there's actually another three or four different, call it, parties that are responsible for this sort of thing. There's an Israeli government information directorate. There's the Diaspora Affairs Ministry. There's the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, amongst others, that are all supposed to actually put out information and explain Israel's cause in the world. And historically, this has been something which has been sort of neglected by the Israeli government. It's nothing necessarily that has been taken seriously. The whole point of the Zionist movement, in some respects, was to not have to explain what was going on and to have to just do things and create what Israelis like to refer to as facts on the ground. But in the 21st century, there is quite a lot of requirement to do what they call public diplomacy. And, you know, the apocryphal story is always that the amount of money that Israel used to spend on its image in the world was not equivalent to a single tank that they were buying to do military defense. And to fill that gap, what you've seen in the last few years has been the involvement of a lot of NGOs, private philanthropy initiatives, sometimes backed by government, but mostly not, who have gone out there and either done work to do promoting Israel's image or has done sort of development work which help, you know, build engagement in the world. And so you've seen sort of famous water projects and eye projects that do health in Africa and agriculture and a whole network and ecosystem of people and projects that have been put together to really try and first of all make a difference and reach out, but also to make connections for Israel abroad. And these projects have been severely hampered since October the 7th. There's a group called Project 10 that used to be run by the Jewish Agency, which used to take Israelis and Jews to different parts of the world to bring them together, but to also do Tikuna Olam initiatives. We had one here in South Africa, and that closed pretty quickly after October 7th. But the whole Project 10 set of projects in Mexico and Uganda and all sorts of other places actually used to be under the Jewish Agency, and that's been moved now because what's happened is that a lot of philanthropy that used to support these sorts of projects has now gone into more internal issues inside of Israel. And so a lot of these projects are at risk. The government used to have a program, or has a program, called Moshav, which is also about development aid, but that's been sort of severely underfunded for many years as well. And so on the one hand, you have this issue where the soft power discussion is disorganized. It's being run mainly by the diaspora, and is not seen as a priority. So that's on the one side, which makes a lot of sense in the context of the war. On the other side, it looks like Israeli politicians and politics has kind of coalesced to actually make this more of an issue. The previous Minister of Foreign Affairs, Israel Katz, was not seen as particularly interested in this topic or out there or particularly active. With the joining of the new coalition agreement of Gideon Saar, someone who has been involved with these sorts of topics before, he was previously a minister of strategic affairs, which, as I said, does deal with these things, and now he's minister of foreign affairs. And his condition for being made minister of foreign affairs was that he would also get more money for that. And so the Israeli government has suddenly upped the amount of cash that they're going to be giving to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. They're giving it to someone who does have some background and knowledge of what is going on in this particular area. And so on the one hand, we have a sort of lack of resources for various important issues. But on the other hand, the coalition seems to have helped revitalize the importance of this, and it seems to have gotten to the top again. So it will be interesting to see the Foreign Affairs Ministry, which does all the diplomats, all that sort of thing, has been fairly unfunded for many years. And so now it will be interesting to see what Saar does to start rebuilding the image of Israel abroad through his post at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And one can only hope that there will also be a interesting a new approach, and that things get a bit organized as well. So interesting times ahead for that side of discussions, and we will be able to bring them here to you as we carry on doing that.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
I am Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM, chatting today about a variety of things that are going on in your world. And I'd love to hear from you what you think of the Oscar season. What do you think of the films that are out there? Have you seen any? Are they interesting for you? 061-895-1019 is the WhatsApp line. Let us know if you have been watching any of these and are finding any of them interesting. It is a fascinating topic, where Hollywood goes and how much particularly things like this fire are going to deal with. Now, let's talk about another issue that maybe you hadn't thought of in the last while, but which might be affecting certainly it's actually an issue in South Africa, but this one is being dealt with in Israel. So let's hear about it and find out what are they doing. So a group of Israelis have got together because in the middle of the war, they've been very concerned about safe passages for wildlife, if you can believe such a thing. They are looking for innovative solutions to save Israel's wild animals, because it is estimated somewhere between 6 and 10,000 animals are killed on roads annually in Israel, with habitat destruction and fragmentation worsening the situation. That is according to Safe Passages for Wildlife, which is implementing innovative, cost-effective solutions to reduce roadkill and restore wildlife populations. And if you've ever driven in Israel, you'll know that there's large stretches with desert where things run out into the road. In the north, it's also very rural, and all of this can be a huge problem when it comes to animals being killed and being run over. And although you might not think about Israel as being a strong place for wildlife, they have all sorts of stuff, from camels to foxes to hyena type things to owls and bird life that travel from like South Africa even through Israel onto to the northern hemisphere. So wildlife killing is a huge problem and something which they wanted to work on. And it's interesting that this group, the Safe Passages group, says that they became aware of the issue during the COVID-19 pandemic, because the woman who ran it is called Maya Segal. She says she was surprised to discover that roadkill incidents are more frequent on less busy roads because the animals feel more, she says, at home and are able to move about freely, unlike busier roads where the heavy traffic actually scares them off. And Segal, who helped create this project, is a nature lover who dedicates her free time to wildlife protection and left her career in tech to focus on the organization's mission. Now, the organization has 7 full-time members who are supported by a group of experts, and they study all sorts of things, from barn owl being killed to ecological restoration and design nature-orientated design, impact of human activities on wildlife behavior, all sorts of things. So what are they doing to actually help stop people having a problem of roadkill in Israel? So one of them is a bot, of course, because everything has to be a bot these days. And this is a roadkill reporting bot. And the bot is introduced to gather real-time data on wildlife collisions. The report bridges the gap between existing data from the Nature and Parks Authority and it sends it directly to researchers. And by collecting a representative sample and a clear picture of what's happening, they can then look and pressure decision makers into taking action. The initiative also promotes citizen science, enabling the public to contribute valuable data that researchers cannot collect alone. And by getting detailed information such as the number of species of animals killed and the exact locations, then more effective solutions can be implemented. Also, as part of it, is a wildlife and communities program where the initiative will aim to prevent collisions with animals in key areas. The program will be working in 10 local councils, and they were selected on criteria such as high rates of deaths of animals and places that have endangered species, as well as proximity to nature reserves. And in addition to this, they're also looking at changes in the infrastructure, which I find particularly interesting. Segal, for example, emphasizes that habitat destruction can be mitigated through cost-effective measures, not just expensive infrastructure like wildlife bridges or tunnels. Other ways of helping to stop animal killings include securing garbage bins, reducing artificial lighting, creating wildlife openings in fences around communities and agricultural fields, adapting water crossings under roads to accommodate wildlife, and using vegetation to guide animals away. Segal says that in Costa Rica, they have managed to use speed limits near wildlife reserves have also been successful. So it's a very, very interesting topic, and wildlife is something that is an issue for all of us everywhere, and so good to see some innovation coming out of Israel, even at such a difficult time, to help save the animals there. My name is Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. Now, if you opened up the Daily Maverick this morning, you would have seen an article by foreign correspondent Peter Fabricius about what we can expect from the new Trump administration with regards to Africa. And there is quite a lot. It took the Biden administration quite a lot of time to actually get the key officials in place in Africa to start getting things going. But for whatever reason, the Trump administration this time around seems a great deal less chaotic and seems focused. There's not a lot of things that are leaking. And so perhaps we will start to see some early movement in the Africa relationship as soon as Trump hits the ground, which will be in about a week and a bit. And we will then start to see what happens there. A lot of the article is, of course, focused around the issue of AGOA. A lot of people had been hoping that the entire AGOA process would be completed before Congress ran out of term. That doesn't seem to have happened. AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunities Act, which is a preferential trade agreement whereby South Africa doesn't have to have tariffs on goods going to the States, but they do have tariffs here. It's not just for us, it's for the whole of Africa, but we benefit the most, particularly our farmers and our car and auto manufacturing plants. And so now it's going to be a question about whether it gets signed off this year. It has to be done by by 2025 in September. So that's this year. And there's going to be a question around what Trump does. Trump does not like free trade deals. He definitely doesn't like preferential trade deals. But given that Africa really accounts for such a small amount of trade, it might just fly under his radar while he decides whether he would like to annex Canada and Greenland and the Panama Canal as part of his foreign policy. South Africa, on the other hand, keeps seeming to stand in it every single time that they do something. The Daily Maverick article talks about the new ambassador who we've sent to America, Ibrahim Rasool, who is sort of quite well liked in the DC establishment, but given the particular concern that the Trump administration has around terrorism, Ibrahim Rasool's sort of long-standing engagement with members of the Muslim Brotherhood, which are connected to Hamas, that might play against him in this particular instance. And so, articles and information sources in the States have started to be highlighting his link, which I think might make his life more difficult. Also, calls from groups like the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies for Trump to take a hard look at South Africa and see where this goes. Now, hopefully, what it means is that it can deter South Africa from further bad behavior when it comes to Iran and Russia and obviously the ICJ and the Hamas and a number of the other countries that we work with that are particularly problematic from not just America's point of view, but from a rule of law globally. And definitely what we will see, I think, is of all the countries that I think Trump might have a problem with that aren't actively in a war, we might come up. So hopefully this South African government will learn a lesson, it will moderate some of its aggression, and that we will start to see a proper engagement between South Africa and America. We will certainly be watching very carefully and be analyzing from this side of affairs about what is going on, as this brings us to the end of the show for today. Thank you so much to everyone for your participation today in the show. Thank you to Vusi for the sound, to Craig who pushes all the big red buttons, and we'll see you next week on the New Blue Review.